We belong. We belong everywhere. Whatever you want to do, wherever you want to go, you belong.
Hello everyone, and welcome to this new episode of We Belong. Today we're very excited to be in Brussels, and I'm joined by Salwa Boujour, which is, a journalist, a multimedia advocate, an artist, and also an author. So welcome, Salwa.
Thank you for having me.
So Salwa, let's start with, as a forever guest, what is one word that best describes you and why?
Very difficult to pick one word only, but I would say determination, because even if I will be stopped by different obstacles, different problematic, I would never be like, I would never be desperate, and I would never give up on my purpose. It's not always easy, but I think that's the main character that I get, that my describe me.
All right, and you know what? I hear this a lot when I interview people. It's I think the word that comes most, determination, and I think it's a key quality of a leader. And you can lead a project, you can lead in your family, in your community. You did many of these things, and why did you decide to become a multimedia journalist in your career?
Well, first of all, that's a question of representation. I remember me when I was a teenager, I was watching TV, and I was really triggered by how we were depicted as Muslim, as Moroccan people. And the only way I saw to change that was to become a journalist myself. And also, now that I'm in my career, and now that I also know my story really well, my family story, I can say that I'm a storyteller, because my two grandmothers are very good storytellers. So yeah, that's in my DNA, I think. I love to tell the facts, I love to tell stories, I love to meet people, and also I love to contribute to a representation of society that is true, not only through the lens of dominant people.
And that's amazing to hear, especially the fact that you mentioned your grandmothers, because first of all, it's women that inspired you, but also it's, you know, maybe in your DNA that you like to tell stories. And I know that you grew up here in Brussels. So can you tell us more about your background, but also your childhood here?
So I was born here in Brussels. My father was born here too. And my grandfather, he came in the 60s because Belgium needed workers to rebuild the society, to rebuild the country, because Belgium was really suffering from a very deep economic crisis. And we just celebrated 60 years of this agreement between Belgium and Morocco. So that's why I'm here today, because this country needed arms. And
that's ironic, right? Like, they needed you, and today there is, I'm gonna give my opinion, but there is so much, you know, reluctance towards migrants, because, you know, it's another context or, you know, another time. But it's so hypocritical to, you know, have an agreement with Morocco and having Moroccans come here. And today, are Moroccans included in Brussels? I'm not sure.
Yeah, first of all, I would say Belgium still needs us.
Yeah.
Different fields, as workers, but also as intellectuals, because, you know, my grandfather, he came here, he was working with his arms and hands, and today I'm working mostly with my brain. So that's a very huge evolve, first of all. And also, yeah, that's quite paradoxical to see how they treat migrants. And not only Moroccan people, also people from other backgrounds. Like, I don't know if you're aware, but last month in February, an Afghan asylum seekers committed suicide because they denied his right to stay here as a refugee. That's horrific. That's a nightmare for him, for his family, and for all of us as Belgian citizens.
Absolutely. And this also make us think about the bias towards, you know, the Afghan crisis, you know, the Taliban's taking power a few years ago in 2022, and then a year later, the Ukrainian war with Russia, and everyone was welcomed. Whereas with Afghanistan, we have been working with some friends activists to rescue some people, and it was such a struggle. They were mainly taking only women, whereas with Ukraine, it was open arms. So it seems that your skin color also dictates the way you're going to be supported with humanitarian efforts.
Yeah, I think it was a huge shock for most of people here in Belgium, but also in Europe, to see this different treatment between human, like to see that Ukrainian people were more than welcome because of their skin color, because of their same culture. But yeah, I think we are just, the gap is just like getting more and more deep between citizens and the different institutions, and European institutions included, sadly, I have to say, because yeah, we also see that with what happens currently in Palestine. It's just horrific to see that, you know, we elected politicians, we vote, we contribute with our with taxes, we work, we are like 100% and more than 100% involved in society, and to see that we are not listened to, our voice is not listened to. You know, there were so many people in the street to claim for the rights of refugees, to claim for the rights of Palestinian people, to claim for a ceasefire. But yeah, it's still the same answer, it's still disappointing. And also, I'm afraid of the future of Europe. You know, we see a lot of far-right governments appearing here and there in Europe. And yeah, I think rejecting migrants for no legitimate reason is a part of the right and far right government's agenda.
Of course, and you know, how I perceive it, it's, you know, these far right parties in Europe, across Europe. I mean, I'm from Italy, we have it in power. So all these parties are gaining seats and votes, and people that believe in their, you know, ideas, just because they're so left down by the establishment, by the, you know, mainstream parties, then, you know, it's crucial, especially on these elections, to mobilize people to vote, because not everyone votes today. There is a lot of absenteeism, you know, people that just don't go to vote, or don't make the effort, or don't believe that it's, you know, important to do so. And it's their right if they don't want to vote, but then it's very scary to see the state of the European Union, and also to see how little minorities are first represented but also spoken about. Like, I'm seeing every time I'm checking regularly the European Parliament Instagram, they cover nothing of this. And I'm like, are you really aware of the what's at stake? Like, I would say lives are on the line, and I'm weighing my words. Like, there is people that literally die because of racism, or because discrimination, or because human rights are denied.
Yeah, and I would add that media has a huge power and responsibility in this context, in this pre-electoral context, because, you know, if people that are likely to go to far right, extreme right, parties or governments, that's also because they are not well informed. You know, there are so many
disinformation,
fake news, and yeah, we as journalists, we have the responsibility to educate people. And what we can see today is that we most of the time invite people who are spreading fake news, and you know, the fact that we are not paid enough, that we work like in the rush. We have to deliver the information quickly, and we can't like fact check as we normally should.
Yeah.
And we see the result. Like, people, they're not aware of inequalities, they are not aware of discrimination, and they are not aware about the truth. You know, there still remains a lot of stereotypes, and it has an impact on how people they see society. You know, media, it's a kind of window on society, and if we spread all this disinformation, all these stereotypes, then we create a kind of image in people's brain. And we have this responsibility more now, more than ever, to educate people and to inform them correctly. We have to fight for that. That's what describes our democratic societies. That's media. If we don't have that, how then can we like describe ourselves as democratic? What's the difference between us and other countries?
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't put it better. You did say it very well, and especially speaking about media, the power of media, the importance to have a fact-checking process, but also all these stereotypes. And that's when people like you are needed on media, because you have a multicultural background, you come from a place of knowledge and experience and lived experience that you can share. And when there is a topic to cover that, you know, concerns either migrants or immigrant descent, or citizens just that have a different cultural background, you have this sensitivity. And I think this is very crucial. So thank you so much for this. And by the way, this also brings me to my next question to you, because I know that you founded this project. This is an association of, which is the Association for Diversity and Inclusion Media. And you also wrote a book, or co-wrote it, book which is called Her Story, which is very in line with Pau Her, our leadership program. But Her Story, I mean, why? And especially Adim, what prompted you, I can imagine, following what you said, but can you tell us why did you start and what's your mission?
So the initiative came from Mariam Colli, who is a professor at University Saint-Louis. And yeah, she gathered influential and engaged, committed women, committed to society. And the purpose was to describe how we as women from a minority in Europe, in this very European context, we use our image to advocate for our rights, and how we make ourselves visible in a society that is making us not visible.
Marginalized, right?
Yeah. And yeah, how we use social media, how we use our image. And yeah, the purpose was also to share our commitment story from where it started to today. So the purpose was to create this book as an heritage to all of you. And each chapter begins with a letter that we wrote for our future sisters,
nice,
daughters, nieces. So yeah, the main objective is to depict our journey as feminist of color, Muslim feminist in Europe, how we use our image for that, social media, and as an alternative to be visible, and what we advise our future sisters and the future generations to succeed and to take care of each other and to always look for equality.
Thank you so much. I mean, it's a great way to explain this book. I really want to buy it now. I hope that people will too.
Yeah, so there are two principal reasons. First of all, I was confronted to statistics. Like during many years I was told that there is a lack of diversity in the media field, but nothing was made to change that. And I was listening to that when I was a student. And I also could see the lack of diversity at university, because I was the only one wearing a headscarf. Mm. And people, most of them, they were like white people.
Yeah.
And yeah, so nothing was done to change that. There were many studies to prove the fact that there is this lack, but no action. And I was like, okay, what can we do now to change that? And also, I was a victim of discrimination. And you know, there is this very fancy topic about inclusion. And everyone was like publicly speaking about that. Even media, like they were openly speaking about the fact they were not inclusive. And I was like, okay, you are speaking about that, like on a public level, but who's making something to change that? And also, I am discriminated. So today you are like claiming you want diversity, but as soon as the diversity comes to you, you discriminate it. And I have all the degrees needed because I have a master in investigative journalism and I have a lot of experience. So like,
you need still to prove yourself always. Yeah. Like you need to prove yourself twice or three, four, five times more than a person that is not from diverse
background. They couldn't have a better profile than mine because I also have a huge network and I'm also like on the field. I know people, I know where to go, I have contacts, you know, and that's not easy when you begin, but I had everything. Like I was a piece of diamond. But still, I was discriminated. It was always this topic about my headscarf, you know. Yeah. I had everything. Also, I'm a multimedia journalist, so I have the ability to use all the platform. I can do like podcasts, I can do radio, I can do TV, I can write. But still, I was discriminated. I wasn't like took for who I am. I was discriminated because how I look.
Yeah.
So I was, okay, I don't want this anymore. I don't want anyone else to suffer how I suffered because I was rejected. So yeah, we launched that with some co-founders.
How much time ago?
3 years ago now. Yeah. And so now we work on different topics. So first of all, we try to empower people who are concerned. So people from minorities, like no matter what minority it is. We work with people from LGBTQIA plus community. We work with people of color, and sometimes people are like multi-minorized. So yeah, you can also be like from LGBT and a person of color. So yeah, we try to empower them. For instance, we launched safe spaces for women journalists. And we offer them a space to share their experience as people of color, of people who are minorized in the media field. And we also offer them trainings to be more confident, to learn how to negotiate, to know how to impose yourself in this field who is very violent. Because I also made my thesis about violence against women in the media field.
Yeah.
So I had all the information in my hand to create this project. And we also work with media, so we offer trainings for human resources, for the editor-in-chief, editors-in-chief, to teach them what is diversity and how to include it in a media company. And the third point is the institutions. So we often go to institutions and we often go to panels to
advocate and create
awareness about how it is important to have this diversity in the media sector and how it is linked to democracy, because it's completely it's linked.
Of course, everything 100%. Is linked, and you know, we often say that media is more powerful than politics, right? And you touch a very crucial point. Thank you for sharing your story, first of all, because I know from a place of, you know, experience how hard it is to wear the veil, and it's been also something painful that I decided to turn into something positive by co-founding We Belong. So I'm very happy when I see women that despite what they face, because it can break you, let's be honest,
of course, yes.
Despite this discrimination that you faced, you decided to make something positive for others out of it. And for this, we can shake hands. Like, really, I'm very proud of you. And the second point is, so I want to touch a little bit up on the veil, because, you know, a woman deciding openly and freely to wear a headscarf here in Europe, as you rightly said, the minute you're exposed, you're just either your people close door at you, or they discriminate you, or even they insult you. And you know my story, we follow each other since years. But in terms of media,
they harass you as well.
Yeah, in terms of media, I mean, there is a few media I can cite them, Euronews and others. They before my award and the hate I received in 2019, well before, they took my photo with the veil. I was in Rome wearing the headscarf with the colors of the European Union and the flag. They used this photo in 12 media, European media, to speak about migrants and refugees while I was born in Europe. Like, I'm even not, you know.
That's horrible.
Yeah,
it shows how they just like, we don't fact check.
That's such a stereotype.
That's not deontological. Like,
yeah,
I'm speechless.
Yeah. I'll send you.
It happens very often, you know.
Yeah.
And most of the time, people who are victim of that, of disinformation, it's people from minorities. So I'm very sorry you experienced that, and I hope they changed this.
No,
but
they didn't.
They didn't.
And I didn't write to all of them, but the point is really
there is
that we need
impact,
to,
you know, on the life of people. Just that's you, just the perfect example. There is a very deep impact on people. It's not just not us like writing articles. Like most of the time we don't take this seriously, and we don't.
Yeah.
We are not conscious enough about the fact that we can destroy people's life.
Yeah, personally, it took me years to recover from, you know, the far right harassment, etc. And I decided to take off this veil because of that, not because of my personal beliefs, and that's sad. But I wanted to ask you a question, because for once that I can ask, you know, how do you feel when you travel in the airports and you have your veil? Because personally, when I used to wear it and I traveled a lot across Europe or beyond, even in Europe, as we are European passports, European citizens, we get to, you know, to be stopped and asked and touched and touch my
yeah,
head.
Yeah.
You get this all the time,
yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Because the minute I took it off, now, never. Huh?
Yeah.
And that's such
a
discrimination.
Yeah, it is. And it's quite of a trauma.
Yeah.
Because
you feel violated.
Yeah, we suffer of this security profiling.
Yeah.
Because it's not just you enjoying the fact that you will travel, it's you stressing out because you know they might also like put you out of the queue for an interrogation. And also, you know, when you go abroad, sometimes you go to cities who are not as cosmopolite as Brussels. So
yeah,
it's also seeing these people staring at you like you are an alien.
Yeah, for sure, exactly, you know. And everyone can carry, you know, the weight that they can carry. Personally, I arrived at a point where I just couldn't handle this alienization, right? Like, it was just too much every time, because then in my brain, personally, maybe you have the same experience. Every time you meet a person, you need to do twice the effort to prove that you're a normal person, just to prove that you're not, you know,
yeah,
close-minded. Or,
you know, I remember the most horrible experience I had traveling in Europe. It was in Greece, and it was during the migrant flow.
Yeah.
I went to Athens to visit a friend of mine who was doing her Erasmus there. She was following a bachelier in psychology, and you know, as soon as I arrived, people, they didn't want to answer my questions. I was just looking for my way, and they didn't want to answer because they thought I was a migrant. And it took me so minutes to understand, you know. I was just going to people asking them, and they were just staring at me like this, like from top down. Yeah. And they were very like distant, and they were,
it's like you're
scary.
It's like you're, you know, you didn't shower, you
yeah.
you
yeah.
I don't know, but like
yeah.
the feeling of, you know, disrespect and how like how they treat you makes you really feel like you're less than a human.
Yeah,
know?
And also,
that's
you
so
know,
sad.
At the end of the day, we have the European papers, but migrants, they don't have it. So I might be discriminated, or people might think I am a migrant, but still I can move. But they are not able to. And I remember when I came back from Athens, I was at the airport, and I remember a guardian screaming at a young child and telling him to get the hell out, and that he didn't have the right to board in. And it was quite violent. I was just shocked, and no one was reacting. You know, you might say to someone, you don't have the right to board in with another way. You don't need to scream and to humiliate people.
For sure.
It was a child. Mm-hmm. I was feeling so bad. I wanted to cry. Like, you know, and you know, it could be you.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, when it comes to migration, and I'm very happy that you are covering this topic, I often say it's the winning and losing topic of elections. And now we are in 2024, it's the biggest year of election, according to The Economist, in the sense that, especially in Europe, we're going to, you know, cast our vote for another mandate for MEPs, for the parliament, the European Parliament. You live in Brussels. You know that there is 24 MEPs who are people of color out of 751. I want to understand from your point of view as a Bruxelloise, a Brussels person, how do you feel about these institutions that are in the heart of your city? Are you close to them? Are you far?
Yeah, first of all, I would say I'm a high educated person. I work in the media field, so I know what happens in Belgium, in Europe, and at an international point. But I have to admit that we don't know how the European institutions work, like, actually.
Yeah.
But I am educated. What about teenagers? What about people who hadn't the chance to study, to follow a university courses? And you know, the gap between European institutions and us is first of all physical.
Yeah,
you know, it's in a very fancy neighborhood, the prices are very high, and also the rent is just like exploding there, so you don't go in this space often, you know, when you are not from a
high class, or
yeah, a higher social class. So yeah, there is this physical barrier. Like, I can feel it.
Mm. Where did you grow up in Brussels?
In Skarbek.
Okay, Skarbek.
So we call it le croissant pauvre, the poor croissant.
Croissant. I love
croissant.
It.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
so yeah, so physically there is a barrier.
Yeah, yeah,
and
also
then
people who are there, we call them expatriés.
Yeah.
But I am daughter of immigrants.
Yeah.
So you know, there is this physical barrier, there is this language barrier, and you know, there is a kind of parallel world,
yeah,
where everything is made for these people, everything is done for them, like bio shops, activities, networking sessions. Like, there is a side world, like, for these very high privileged people.
Yeah.
And there is us.
Yeah.
So yeah, there is this physical barrier. We don't know how it really works. We don't know who is elected. We don't know what are they doing, like, on a daily basis.
Why do we pay you with our taxes? You know what? That's, oh my God, that's so important that you say this, because I get really mad when I check the Instagram of the European Parliament. And this is because 2 days ago they posted, right, they posted about the day of elections. Remember to register, mark your agenda. And then they wrote on caption, it's very easy to mark on agenda. So that's the information you're giving me. Do you think that me, reading your post, I'm gonna be like, oh wait, I need to mark it on my agenda to go and vote. Why do I need to vote? Why is it important? Why politics are important? What do they do, these people that we vote? Of course it's so needed. And thank you for mentioning this. It's so important.
Yeah, and I would say the gap is even deeper because of what happens in Palestine, because people, yeah, they were like expecting a lot of European institutions, and we are still waiting for a ceasefire, and we are still waiting for the hostage to,
yeah,
be freed.
No, for sure.
And people are still dying today, and we see live streaming, like we can document this genocide, we can document the hostage attack, the 7 October attack, I mean. So yeah, seeing all these people having that power and doing nothing with it, it's just heartbreaking. It's alarming,
yeah,
and it's just like making this gap bigger.
For sure.
And I don't think it encourages people to vote, especially youngsters. We see these huge buildings, huge institutions. We see people wearing suits going there with like very fancy clothes and speaking English, but we don't know them.
Yeah.
I really encourage you to go down from your castle, going to the street, to the village, and to talk to us. Especially, you know, just speaking with people, people who has influence, like content creators, journalists, leaders, entrepreneurs. Just begin with them, and we can spread the message. At least, like, we don't ask you to do everything, even if you should, because you paid for that. But yeah, just move your body, move. We need you.
Absolutely. Thank you for this call to action. It's so powerful. And again, we don't know them, you say.
Also very important, yeah, important point, just create a budget for that. Like, don't ask people for their time, for their energy, for free, because we are busy. We also have tax to pay. So you can have your salary. We have tax to pay, we have a rent to pay, we have bills to pay. We are just in a crisis moment. So yeah, just have a budget for that, to also empower these people, because it's a part of empowering, to like help them to be financially independent and to make them emancipated. Thanks to money, we have to speak about that as well. Also, especially women and women of color, we are always like making this beautiful report, like, yeah, there is a salary gap, there is gap of this and that. We all only have gaps, but how to fill these gaps?
Yeah, it's not enough to write reports. And you know, it's such a great conversation, especially as for years, a lot of institutions, they tokenize youth, minorities, women.
Mm-hmm.
They invite you, they don't pay you, they ask you to deliver stuff, even short notice sometimes. And at the end of the day, you're just a token.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important to have a meaningful representation. And again, my point at the beginning, 24 MEPs, POC, people of color, it's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the European Union doing to be more representative of the population? Because as you said, you're in Brussels, right? You don't even know what they do,
mm-hmm,
but at the same time, there is no one maybe coming from your background there,
mm-hmm,
or at least from your city or from,
yeah,
your...
Yeah, you can't like relate, and there is no identification process. Like, you just see these people from a higher class, another skin color. Like, there are too much characteristics that are like making you even far from me, you know? And yeah, I would say, you know, to use the knowledge and time and energy of women of color, people of color, and women without paying them, without giving them the credit, because there is also a lot of IDs stealing.
Yeah, they're stolen, yeah.
Yeah, it's a kind, it's like, it's a type of neo-colonization, you know, because you use our bodies and intellect and everything for free. You just like exploiting us.
And our stories also, like when there is, how many women wearing a veil in France or even beyond have been used by media, got viral, okay, to stand in front of far-right people in a TV show and just being attacked. So it's violence.
Yeah, speaking about that, you know, there is actually, there is a very huge difficulty for media to attract this woman, Muslim woman, visible Muslim woman, because they experienced this violence and they don't want it anymore, because you know it doesn't only stop on internet. Some of them, they received letters at home to threaten them, and some of them, they were aggressed in the street, in our streets in Europe. So yeah, today they are struggling to invite them, and most of the time I receive call for that, like, yeah, do you know someone? They only call me for that. They don't call me when there is another topic, and that's also why I'm always saying no, I'm not gonna come to speak about that, because first of all, that's not my main topic. Like, I have the ability to cover so many other topics, so don't like only invite me when it's a question of hijab. And so yeah, it has impacts, and they are just, they lost at their own play, you know. In French we say ils ont perdu à leur propre jeu, because they wanted to go viral, they wanted audience, but now they are stuck. No one wants to go there anymore to have debate or to speak or to be visible, because there is no security after these interviews.
And plus, we understood the game. Both from politics and from media, they go hand on hand. Like, it's really, I would say, the veil in France especially is like kryptonite. And it's like this scapegoat that we go to instead of really caring about the right problems. But the issue with this is that it influences citizens. They might not know you or me or any other person of color, but then they think that all immigrant descents, they are violent, they are dangerous, they are submitted, you know, women with the way they are not free, we need to free them. No, I can free myself, thank you.
But you know, it's very tiring to only seeing ourselves through this discourse. You know, I don't want to justify myself anymore and to prove that I'm not submitted. If you want to think that, just you're free, then I know I'm not. You know, it's just like keeping us
stuck in something that you want to move on
from.
Yeah,
and also it's just keeping us distracted from what matters, you know. And we live our life to struggle. You know, I really encourage people who are listening to us, to are seeing this video, to not only seeing themselves as a minority and not only seeing themselves through this racist, sexist discourses. Like, free yourself from that, otherwise you will just be sick in your life. And we also, we are humans. We have personal purposes, we have a private life, and I really encourage people to follow what they want to do in this life, because we are not here forever. So yeah, stop just paying, stop feeling offended by that, I would say, because it's just a loss of time, and time is counted. And I would say the easiest way to free ourselves from this oppression and this discourse is to know our story. You know, today we spoke about my grandfather, we spoke about my father. Now I'm so proud of my family, I'm so proud of my background, I'm so proud of what Moroccan people did in this country and for Europe as migrant. You know,
and keep doing.
Yeah, you know,
Moroccans, but also the Moroccan government supports France a lot. It's not only the other way around.
Yeah, and also, you know, Moroccan people from the diaspora, like, we are everywhere, like, in every field, you know, from like cleaning the streets to the parliament, we are everywhere, and we are still today contributing to this society. And you know, people have to be aware about the fact that Europe earned a lot of money because of our work, and still today. So why should I feel like ashamed? Why should I feel sad or bad? No, I'm proud of myself. Like, I'm so smart, I know so a lot of things, and I'm so useful in this society. So I don't give a fuck if people want to say I'm like oppressed. Like, okay,
take it.
Yeah, okay,
fine. Next,
think whatever you. Yeah, just thank you. Next, just like, we have to be focused on our objectives.
Thank
whatever
you so
it
much.
Is, whatever is it?
That you're so wise. You're my age. I can't believe it. Honestly, you're speaking in a very wise way, and I thank you so much for this advice, especially as it's really in line with our values that we belong. You know, whatever you want to go, wherever you want to go, whatever you want to do, you belong everywhere. And yes, I agree with you. We should really promote ambition, determination, and I can see the determination in your eyes, and the fact that you should own your story.
And also self-care and community. Like, you know, we are in a very individual, liberal world, and that's not a part of our background. You know, most of us come, our grandparents, they come from villages, they were living in community, and when they came, that's what saved them, because, you know, they came here not speaking the language, not having the means, not knowing the system, and living together, supporting each other, that's what helped them to survive. You know, I don't know if people realize that they came, most of them, they were not able to read or to write.
Mm.
And they created us, you know, they sacrificed themselves so we can have a better life. And we have it now. We have it.
You know, I'm gonna cry now, huh?
We have it. So
it's really moving what you say. It's so important.
So yeah,
so
just
important.
Please, if you see this, try to think about each other. Try to have a small, in French we say un noyau, a pit of people who are trustful, try to help each other, and yeah, just, you know, the most important heritage I have today, it's my values. No, I don't have a lot of money, I don't have
not yet. I'm sure you're going to become a very famous journalist.
Inshallah. But yeah, you know, there are so many things I don't have, but I have values. I have values, and you know, it's like a tree. You have the racine, I don't know.
The roots.
You have the roots of this tree, and today our roots, like to be this strong and confident, it's the values.
Yes.
So please cultivate these values, try to stick to it, try to share it. And yeah, we need like to be, we need to trust each other, and we need to be together hand in hand as our grandfathers, grandmother did, because it's how we're gonna survive in this very violent society.
Amazing. You couldn't end it better. But before we leave, you gave a lot of advice, and I'm sure that many people will find it useful. So my last question for you, if you have one advice in few sentences about how a young person that wants to feel included in society, how can they do, and especially how can we do to include more people from diverse backgrounds on media? What is your advice to people that want to work in this field?
You have to dare. Like, no one will come to you and knock on the door and offer you something on a silver plate. Like, it doesn't exist. It exists for some people from higher class, but not for you. So I really recommend you to stop being afraid. As soon as you feel this, like, as soon as you feel scared, that's the moment you have to jump. Yeah, like, it's not personal development bullshit. Like, really, when you want to do something, you have to give yourself the means. Just try. People say no to you, try another person. Like, just try there. And also, you have to build your network. That's very important. You know, there is no bullshit self-made stuff. No one is self-made. Like, in our path, we always meet people who know someone who can help us. For instance, today we are at Sit at the Table because you know someone who could offer us this space.
By the way, thank you, Sit at the Table, for hosting us.
So yeah, you know, everything is based on the network.
Yeah.
The most strong network you have, the more large it is, the most means you have. So yeah, there, build your network, and also have a very strong entourage, so environment.
Yeah, your surrounding,
yeah,
right? Your
yeah,
close people.
Surround yourself by people who are like you, who are ambitious and who also want the same thing as you. You know, it's so important to be surrounded by people who have the same values and who know what they want in life, and that's how we go where we need to go. And just trust yourself and trust the universe or God or whatever your belief is. We need to trust something. We need, you know, it's not easy. We might fail, we might cry, we might be harassed, we might be aggressed, we might lose money, we might be sick. So yeah, you have to believe in something, in yourself or in something else, but that's very important. And take care of your health. Health is everything. There is no fame or money or a trip or whatever or followers that may offer you health when you don't have it. So take care of yourself, take care of your health. Also, we are in Europe, so it's easier for us to take care of yourself.
Thank you so much. I mean, so many valuable advice. It was a gem of, you know, really good lesson learned, advice, and I'm sure many people will enjoy this conversation. So thank you for having me with us. And most importantly, Selwa, thank you so much for the work that you do.
Merci.
Thank you. Bye.
This was the end of our episode. If you liked it, please share it, and you can find us on all platforms and social media. Bye!